KOA1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Dan Novak and Katie Weaver. Later, John Russell presents a new Everyday Grammar Report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Novak.
The leader of the Roman Catholic Church, Pope Francis, has led the funeral of former leader Pope Benedict XVI. Tens of thousands of mourners attended the event Thursday in St. Peter's Square in Vatican City. Some called on the church to name Benedict a saint. Benedict retired as pope in 2013. He was the first to do so in 600 years. Most popes lead the church until they die. At the end of the funeral, some people in the crowd shouted in Italian, "Make him a saint now." About one-third of all popes have been declared saints in the 2,000 years the church has existed. That includes three of the last five popes. Benedict has been both praised and criticized for his service. Conservative Catholics liked his support of a more traditional church. Critics accuse him of protecting clergy accused of sex crimes and other wrongdoing. Francis sat for most of the service because of a knee injury. He only named Benedict once at the service attended by 50,000 people. He stood at the end as Benedict's coffin was being carried away for a private burial inside the church. Lowering his head in prayer, Francis briefly touched the casket. A record documenting Benedict's time as pope was placed in his coffin, along with other objects. The document says Benedict fought with firmness against sexual abuse by clergy in the church. Benedict largely avoided public appearances after his resignation. But he remained a leader for Catholic conservatives who disagree with modern reforms made by Francis. People from all over the world, and many from Benedict's native Germany, had arrived early in the morning to say goodbye. There were also a few heads of state and some European royalty. About 200,000 people went past Benedict's body while it was lying in state for 3 days until Wednesday evening. The service started when 12 people carried the coffin holding Benedict's remains out of the basilica. They then placed it on the ground before the church. Bells rang the entire time. The last time a sitting pope had led a funeral for an earlier pope was in 1802. That was when Pius VII led the service for Pius VI, whose body returned to the Vatican after he died in 1799 in exile. Francis used many biblical references and church writings in the service. He appeared to compare Benedict to Jesus, including his last words before he died on the cross. "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." I'm Dan Novak.
In his new book about life as a member of the royal family, Prince Harry of Great Britain says he was once knocked down in a fight with his brother, Prince William. Harry's book, Spare, came out this week in Spain. It is supposed to be put on sale in other countries on January 10th. The prince is the youngest son of Britain's King Charles III and Princess Diana. His older brother, William, is next in line to become king after their father. The name of the book comes from Harry's position in the royal family. He is the spare, or extra, son. The 38-year-old Harry made news in 2020 when he and his wife, Meghan Markle, decided to leave the royal family and move to California. The book tells of a 2019 argument between the brothers that became a physical fight at Harry's home in London. Harry wrote that William called Meghan difficult, rude, and abrasive. In the argument, Harry wrote, William grabbed him by the shirt, broke his jewelry, and knocked him down. He had scrapes and bruises after falling into the food bowl of the dog and breaking it. Harry said William told Harry to fight back, but he would not. William later apologized, Harry wrote. Spokespeople for King Charles and Prince William did not comment about the story. William and Harry were once considered good friends, especially after the death of their mother in a car crash in Paris in 1997. The brothers have not been as close in recent years. Harry and Meghan gave up their royal duties in 2022. At the time, they said the royal family did not support them after their 2018 marriage. In an interview with American television presenter Oprah Winfrey, and during a recent 6-part documentary on Netflix, Harry said his family gave reporters negative stories about Meghan. The negative stories and lack of support, he said, were a way to protect William. Ahead of the book's wide release, Harry gave interviews to broadcasters ITV of Britain and CBS News of the United States. They are scheduled to come out next week. In a short video released by ITV, Harry said, "I don't know how staying silent is ever going to make things better." Charles became king in September 2022, after his mother, Queen Elizabeth, died. However, the ceremony for his ascension to the throne will be in May. The event is called a coronation. Harry has not yet said if he will be there. When asked by ITV, he said, "I don't know." Harry also told ITV that he feels betrayed by his family for making him and Meghan villains. Harry is fifth in line to lead the royal family, behind his brother and William's 3 children. People who follow the family say Harry has often seemed unable to find his place. He spent 10 years in the British Army before taking on royal duties in 2005. I'm Katie Weaver.
Imagine imagine you are talking to an American. You are curious to know about what they did during the holidays of Christmas and New Year's. How can you ask about these or other holidays? How can you build a discussion about the holiday season? In this Everyday Grammar, we will explore how you can form common questions and answers about the holidays. Let's start with some important terms and ideas. The Christmas and New Year's holidays are important in the United States. Common good wishes during the season include Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. But how do you build a discussion around the subject of such holidays? You can start with yes or no questions, which involve the helping verb do. The structure is generally
do plus subject plus celebrate plus the holiday.
For example, you might ask,
do you celebrate Christmas?
Or,
do you celebrate New Year's Eve?
The person you ask these questions to might answer with a yes or a no. Both answers can lead to interesting discussions. But for the sake of today's report, let's assume the answer is yes. You can follow up with more detailed questions about what the person did for Christmas and New Year's. You might need to ask open-ended questions, questions that are not asking for a yes or no answer. The word what is commonly used to ask open-ended questions about basic actions. We combine what with the helping verb do to form the following structure.
What plus do plus subject plus do plus rest of the sentence.
Notice that the verb do appears twice in the structure. Here is how one might use this structure to ask about holiday activities.
What did you do for Christmas?
Or,
what did you do on New Year's Eve?
Note that the first example of do is in its past tense form, what did. This is because we are asking about an event in the past. You could hear answers that go in a few different directions. One of the most common answers will involve the simple past forms of the verbs go, see, or visit. For example, a person might say, I went to my grandparents' house, or we saw our cousins, or we visited my brother. Note that the person could be speaking for themselves and use the subject pronoun I, or they could be speaking for their family and use the subject pronoun we. Now let's work with these ideas. Ask a yes or no question about the holiday Hanukkah. It is a Jewish holiday around the end of the year. Pause the audio to consider your answer. Here is one possible answer.
Do you celebrate Hanukkah?
For this next question, imagine that you celebrated New Year's Eve in New York City's Times Square. How would you use the verb see if someone asked you about what you did? Pause the audio to consider your answer. Here are a few possible answers.
I saw crowds and decorations.
Or,
I saw the ball drop.
There are, of course, other answers. What is important is that you use the past form saw, as in I saw. The next time you hear Americans discuss the holiday season, pay careful attention to the kinds of questions and answers that they give. Such questions and answers are not only useful for talking about holidays, but for many other activities as well. I'm John Russell. Thank you.
You just heard this week's Everyday Grammar Report, presented by John Russell. He described ways that you can ask Americans about what they did over the holidays. John joins me now to tell us a bit about what he did over the holidays. Hi, John. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Hi, Ashley. I'm glad to be here.
So, John, do you celebrate Christmas?
Yes, I do.
So, what did you do for Christmas?
Well, this Christmas was a bit unusual. I planned to visit my family, but I was not able to go because of bad weather and a lot of problems with air travel. So I mostly spent Christmas in the airport, and then I just returned home.
Oh gosh, I'm so sorry. I read a lot of news reports about how much of a mess the airports and airlines were during the holidays. How about New Year's Eve or New Year's Day? What did you do?
The New Year's holiday was much more relaxed. For New Year's Day, I invited friends over for dinner. It was fun to catch up with them.
That does sound nice. Well, Happy New Year to you, John, and thanks again for talking with me today.
You're welcome. Happy New Year to you and all of our listeners.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In 1863, Union forces defeated Confederate forces in the bloodiest battle of the American Civil War, the Battle of Gettysburg. Soon after that, the Union won another important victory, seizing Vicksburg, Mississippi. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue our story of the Civil War with the Battle of Vicksburg.
In November 1863, President Lincoln traveled to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. He spoke at the opening of a military cemetery. He felt very tired by the time he got back to Washington. Doctors thought he had a cold. Later, they said he had a weak form of smallpox. The president remained in bed. Few visitors could see him. There was a danger the smallpox could spread. Lincoln got better after a few weeks. He began working on his yearly message to Congress. After 2.5 years of war, he had good news to report. Union armies had gained 2 important victories at about the same time.
One was the Battle of Gettysburg. Union forces, led by General George Meade, had defeated Confederate forces, led by General Robert E. Lee. They pushed Lee back into Virginia. It was the last Confederate invasion of the North. The day after the Battle of Gettysburg, Union forces defeated Confederate forces at Vicksburg, Mississippi. This victory gave them control of the Mississippi River, and it split the states of the Confederacy.
Union General Ulysses Grant had been trying to seize Vicksburg for several months. It was not easy. Vicksburg lay on the east side of the Mississippi River. It was built high above the water on a rocky cliff. As the river flowed past Vicksburg, it turned in sharply at the base of the cliff and then continued on to the Gulf of Mexico. The Confederates had placed cannon all along the sharp turn in the river. Enemy boats sailing past made easy targets.
General Grant began the campaign for Vicksburg in late 1862. His army was west of the Mississippi River. He needed to get to the other side to attack the city. First, Grant planned to cross the river into northern Mississippi State. Then he would march south to Vicksburg. He crossed the river, but Confederate forces destroyed his transportation and supply lines. He withdrew. Early in 1863, he tried again.
This time, he planned to sail his men past Vicksburg. They would cross the river a little downstream, turn, and attack. Grant moved 40,000 men to a point 10 kilometers from Vicksburg. He told the men to put down their guns and take up digging tools. They would build a canal to carry them past the turn in the river, past the Confederate cannon.
For weeks, the Union soldiers worked on the canal. They dug through mud and wet clay. Many died of disease. After more than a month of digging, engineers decided that the canal would not work. Grant ordered the men to build another canal. Then another. They did not work either. By this time, the Union soldiers had become experts at digging canals. One of them said, "As soon as the canals at Vicksburg are finished, we are going to cut a canal across the upper part of Florida. We will cut that state off from the Confederacy and give it to the alligators."
Finally, in April 1863, Grant gave up all ideas of getting past Vicksburg without a fight. He decided to march most of his men down the west side of the river to a steamboat landing, 30 kilometers below Vicksburg. He would send his Navy boats past the city at night and hope for the best. It took 3 weeks for Grant's men to reach the steamboat landing. The roads were very rough. In many places, they were covered with water. Engineers had to cut trees and cover the muddy roads with logs so wagons would not sink. They had to build bridges over the many streams.
On the night of April 16th, the Union Navy made its run past Vicksburg. 8 gunboats and 3 empty troop boats floated down the dark river. Their engines were silent. The Confederates, however, had built fires along the river. They saw the Union boats and began to shoot. They hit most of the boats, but destroyed only one. The damaged boats reached safety below the city. On the last day of April, the Union troop boats began carrying soldiers to the east side of the river. About 23,000 men crossed. Right away, they faced a force of 8,000 Confederate soldiers. They drove the Confederates back.
Grant then ordered the rest of his army to cross to the east side of the river. Some of his officers protested. They said it would be impossible to get supplies to a large army east of the river. Grant was not worried about supplies. He said the men should bring only coffee, hard bread, and salt. Anything else could be taken from the farmers of Mississippi. Their homes, he said, were full of food.
Grant decided not to throw his men against the strong defenses around Vicksburg immediately. Instead, he marched them east toward Jackson, the state capital. Jackson was the supply base for the Confederate Army defending Vicksburg. Grant wanted to cut the supply lines between the two cities. He also wanted to prevent the soldiers in Jackson from joining the soldiers in Vicksburg. Grant captured Jackson easily. He left some troops to destroy enemy supplies. He took the remaining troops and turned back toward Vicksburg.
Grant attacked Vicksburg several times. Each time, his troops were thrown back. The city's defenses were too strong. Grant then decided to surround the city and wait until its food was gone. That, he thought, would make the Confederates surrender. Grant closed in with men and artillery. As one soldier wrote, "The circle of Union forces around the city was so tight that a cat could not have crept out without being discovered. Nothing could get out, nothing could get in." Weeks passed. The Union army shelled the city. The Confederate army answered from time to time. Food supplies dropped. There was little to eat except cornbread and the meat of mules. Some people caught rats and ate them.
Finally, the Confederate commander, General John Pemberton, decided the situation was hopeless. He sent word to Grant that he was ready to discuss surrender. The two commanders met under a white flag of truce. Grant demanded unconditional surrender. Pemberton rejected the demand. Pemberton's men were to be prisoners. That was a fact. But Pemberton wanted them released immediately on parole. He told Grant that his men would promise to stay out of the war if permitted to return to their homes. If not, he said, they would continue to fight.
Grant agreed to let the Confederate soldiers go home. He and Pemberton signed the surrender agreement on July 4th. The siege of Vicksburg had lasted 47 days. Never had a Union army won such a victory. Grant had taken 30,000 Confederate soldiers out of the war. He had captured 60,000 guns and 170 cannon. These were serious losses for the Confederacy. It already was low on manpower and weapons, but an even greater loss was the control of the Mississippi River. With Vicksburg in Union hands, the North could control the whole length of the river, and the Confederacy was split badly.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.